Today, this passage, the scripture is fulfilled in your hearing. I love this gospel. It requires a little background to understand the reaction of this community versus all the others that were thrilled with Jesus. His hometown ends up wanting to throw him off a cliff, so we have to figure out in the reading that just follows this. We have to find out what's going on with Jesus. I got a big insight from this from a friend of mine back in what we call junior high school in California. We had so many kids in our class. My seventh grade, we were arranged by the alphabet homerooms. I was in the WXYZ homeroom, so I knew all I can. Zinko, Zippy, Zinsmeister, Zur, and so on. Zinsmeister, I wasn't the last Z. If you're going to be a Z, you want to be the last one. Anyway, in front of me were the W's, and I got to know this Michael Woods. And as I mentioned, a couple of times, we were very good friends. We had religious debates. He was Jewish and I was Catholic. We were interesting 13-year-olds, you know. But he became a rabbi and moved to Israel. He's now an Hasidic Jew. I've been to his home in Jerusalem, and I became a priest, so it's kind of funny. But when we meet, we know what not to talk about now that we're older. Let me put it that way. But I have a lot of respect for him because he went and followed his dream, see? And his family thought he was nuts, just like me. So we have that in common. But I went to his bar mitzvah. Anybody been to a bar mitzvah here? Yeah. And for women are called what? Bat mitzvah. I won't say that again. Thank you. My homilies get better. Well, maybe not. 8:15. So anyway, I went to this. I had no idea. It's kind of like First Communion in a way for us. I was supposed to bring a gift. I didn't. He asked me what he says to me. Did you get me those hankies? I said, yeah, that was it. had to go to confession. But I didn't know I didn't have a clue. But I went to, I had Passover with his family at one time and went to his bar mitzvah. So at 13 years old, and remember, I'm telling you this because Jesus would have done exactly the same basic thing. You're 13 years old. Now, Jesus grew up in town of Nazareth. From a child, his parents brought him there. When he got older, he made tables for people and helped build their homes. They knew him. They knew Mary and Joseph. Joseph died at some point, we think. But Jesus was well known, just like many of the kids here have grown up here at St. Ed's. We know them. We know their families. So at 13, he went to this, it was called Temple Jeremiah. And in the front of they had a kind of an altar like we do. And they didn't offer sacrifice on it, but it represented the altar and the temple of Jerusalem, synagogue. And so underneath was a glass case with a Torah scroll in it. It was very large, rolled up, and I don't know if they ever got it out. They didn't for this occasion, but there it was, all lit up, very dramatic. And my friend got up, and I used to be impressed because he was learning how to write Hebrew. Hebrew looks like hieroglyphics to me, but they write from right to left. So as he was writing this, I'm very impressed with his intelligence, with this. So he got up to read in Hebrew. Now Jesus could have written in Aramaic. We don't know whether the scroll that he opened was Aramaic, which was the language of Galilee, or Hebrew, which would have been the official, like Latin is in the Catholic Church, or at least it was. Latin would be for the high liturgies, and then, a contemporary language is for everything else. So we don't know which language Jesus proclaimed in. But my friend got up, and he's 13. He gets up and picks out a passage of his own choice, like Jesus. Everybody sits down. He didn't sit down like Jesus did. Notice Jesus sat down to expound like the bishop does. Sometimes, if he's really, or the Pope, when he proclaims something very, very powerful, he will sit down on a chair, speaking from the chair. That's ex cathedra. So anyway, my friend stood, not sat, and after he read it, he had to give a homily or he had to expound on the passage. I'd have been terrified at 13. He did a very good job, and that was his bar mitzvah. After that, he's considered to be a young man, if come of age. And this is, Jesus had this. This wasn't the first time he had read and talked. He probably did it a number of times. But in this time, Jesus had been doing miracles all over the place. And they're all wondering, isn't this madman my table? And he's going around. Now, suddenly, he's a miracle worker. They can't figure it out. They're all excited about this. Homeboy, you know, makes good and all this. And so he comes back. Pardon me. He comes back and makes a, it's his turn. Somehow he's chosen, or they asked him to be the speaker. In the Jewish tradition, one doesn't have to be a rabbi to get up and expound. So Jesus, carpenter that he was, he went through probably, you know, Torah school, like we have religious ed, you know, Nazareth religious ed, that was it. They knew he didn't have a rabbinic education. Everybody knew this. So he gets up and he reads Isaiah, which is very relevant to our lives here. He's anointed me to bring glad to the poor, to captives liberty, sight to the blind, oppressed free, a year acceptable to the Lord. Look, those are all actions that bring liberty to people. See, there are things that you do. And then he sits down and he says, today, this passage is fulfilled in your hearing. Can you imagine? What if one of our 18-year-olds went through confirmation, got up and said, today, this passage is fulfilled in your hearing? You'd take me off to a mental institution. I mean, you'd say, this guy, he needs some help, you know. And so in thinking about this, Jesus was so hidden, they didn't know he was the Son of God. It's an amazing moment in human history. The creator of everything is standing in front of his hometown. They had no idea who this man was. And Jesus had really hidden himself. And he still hides himself today. He never left the earth. He's simply hidden in the poor, the blind, the captives, you know, the people in jail, and by implication, everyone we meet, even the ones that aren't religious, even the ones that hate us and persecute us, Jesus is somehow at work in all of this. This is the whole point of this gospel. And I was thinking about the other time Jesus unrolls a scroll. It's in Revelation. And all the nations are assembled around him, and he opens the scroll, and if I can remember this correctly, and the scroll of the book, and the scroll was opened, and the book of life, and other scrolls were opened, which recorded what the dead had done in their lives, by which they were judged. So here again, now Jesus is known by everybody, and he opens a scroll like Isaiah, and he reads those same things. He says, especially us who are coming to church, we're trying to find out what life is about. And he says, do you understand? Did you understand what I called you to do? This was your mission. And the book of life is where the names of the elect are, those who are going to be entering heaven, that have chosen heaven. There are other choices that people make besides heaven, by the way. So we are making our choice. And some people don't realize that they've been serving Jesus, but he tells us how we're going to be serving him. And each of us has, this is a part that I find interesting, we've all got a scroll. I don't believe for a minute it's going to look like one of these ancient Greek manuscripts, but this is an image of a book. It's probably like a movie or something. Our life. He's going to hand us our life and say, this is your life. This is what you gave me, and I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to multiply every one of these things, you know. And so we have to think a little bit about what's in the scroll that we're going to open. It shouldn't be a surprise to us if we're thinking, we hear these gospels, even if we blow it, which we all do, we say we're sorry, and Jesus hits the eraser, right? If we have a mortal sin, a real grave sin, or something on our, that's really bothering us, we go to confession, and it simply won't be there. That's a really great thing. And so we have to ask ourselves, what kind of things can we do? I'm thinking about this. You know, you give to the giving tree here in the back at Christmas. I'm not knocking anybody who didn't do this, but we had about one-third of the parish participate. That's just so awesome. And nobody knows the child that got that, but Jesus may hand you a toy and say, you gave me this. Thank you very much. Or I was thinking about, you know, Salem finally shoot all those people out from under the bridge, but we gave sandwiches to those people for years and years here. I'm very proud of that. Maybe it was necessary to remove them. I don't follow the news that much. I just know that they're gone. But the question is, where did they go? we as a society have to do something. But, you know, as St. Ed's, we did do something. I can't change the way the nature of this country or the fact that rents are too high or all that. I wish I could. But you know what? I can try the person next to me. We can do something. We did do something. Most of you didn't participate in that. But if you gave some money here, you did participate. The Lord might say, thank you for giving me that sandwich. You'll say, I never did this. Well, yes, you did, because somebody did it in your name, and you supported this. On the other hand, we have other things which don't go quite so well for people, and they don't realize it. One of the two that comes to mind was in New York City. Many of you know what happened this week. On the very day of Pro-Life Tuesday, I believe, where the church is doing the mass for all the unborn, and by implication, everyone else living that is not valued, especially towards the end of life, you know, the whole spectrum of it. And New York passed the most liberal abortion law I think that's ever been passed. Everything was repealed, and right up to the moment of birth, they can be destroyed. And and I have to say that if that's happened to anybody here, the church wants to heal you in confession, not throw a book at you. But it's the people that really are in trouble with this are the ones that knowingly pass these laws. That's where the real danger for their souls is. And that what really bothered me was that all the skyscrapers were painted pink, including the Freedom Tower, where 6,000 died. And think of all the ones that they're celebrating paganism. This is paganism. You know, in the early church, the pagans around them routinely put babies out on the porch to die. That's how they handled unwanted children. And Christians came along and said, no, these are valuable. Don't do this anymore. And slowly the West developed this idea that life was sacred, and it's all being repealed. And now life is only sacred if the law says you are. That's a very dangerous thing. But my point in saying that is that what goes around comes around. You know, I think that there's a little charity that I've always supported. I think I've told this before in New York. End on a happier note than that. The Xavier Society for the Blind. I look for charities that are 98% and no overhead, you know, that kind of thing. They're run on a shoestring. And so I've always given a little money to that, I guess partly because I'm practically blind without my glasses. And we're taking this tour of New York. I did this retreat with a couple of priests, and then we went to New York City. And we're taking this double-decker bus. It was so hot, so we got on this thing, and oh, boy, it was just, boy, try that in the summer. You'll love it. And I never had the lower Manhattan tour. I only had the midtown. So we're going along and went through Wall Street and where everybody invests and stuff. And then I just happened to look down on this tour, and there I caught my eye was the little office of the Xavier Society of the Blind. And just by accident, I saw it there. And the Lord said, there's one of your investments. See, and then one day somebody came in here and they had a Braille book. And I said, gee, that's interesting. Where did you get that? And she said, well, I'm very poor, but the Xavier Society of the Blind gave me that. And I thought, wow, I gave her that. And you see how God's going to hand us back that little Braille book and say, You were a force for good. These people are working evil, but you did something. I can't change the world. I wish I could. It seems to be getting worse every day. I sound like my grandparents. But, you know, it's actually I'm becoming like them in shape, too, I have to admit. But, you know, but we can be a force for good because one day the Lord's going to unroll that scroll for each one of us. Every single one of us has a scroll. And, you know, all God wants to know is that we loved him somewhere in this world, that we tried. They said, I know you couldn't change things. I know things were tough. But give me what you can, and I'll multiply it for you. And it'll be glory for you and me forever. And so I think that's the real message of this gospel. They're always for us. Is that we're in the synagogue with Jesus, and he's unrolling the scroll, and we too don't recognize him any more than they did, but we did recognize him whenever we helped somebody else, and that's really what fulfilling the gospel is all about.